goes out to the one. Welcome back, everybody. Blunt Instruments Podcast. It's your boy Luke from Bond's apartment. Let me introduce you to none other than Lorenzo Omega Bond Watches Paisano. What's going on, guy?
What's up, dude? Good morning. How is
good evening,
your
good night?
Yes. The Truman Show.
Yeah. What a flick. What a flick, by the way.
I remember that movie.
I tried to get
Brianna. Who was the girl? Was that
that's
Sarah
Linney?
Mila?
No, that's Laura Linney from
are you talking about his wife or the one he's like falling for?
The one he's falling for.
Oh, I'd have to look. I can't remember.
I think that's the chick from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
It might be. You might be right. What a great movie. I tried to get Brianna to watch it and wasn't her speed.
What, Truman Show?
Yeah.
Brianna, get on the train.
Not her speed because there's no Kardashians in it, I think is probably the main issue.
Not her speed because there's an actual storyline?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's that Natasha McElhaney or Mech, whatever the fuck.
McElhaney.
She was like in that show, that one that Kiefer Sutherland just did when like the whole cabinet gets nuked and then he takes over as president. It was like on ABC or something for like 2 seasons. I can't remember what it's called. Anyways, what's going on, guy? What's going on in Las Vegas?
It's cold. It's cold as shit here. I mean, cold as shit for Vegas standards. I mean, yesterday I was rocking my Billy Reid pea coat.
Cass had the Canada Goose on. I'm sure
she had the Canada Goose on and it was fully zipped. So, I mean, it was a thing out here. Yeah. But I think it's just a little cold front that's going to pass here in about another week. So that'll be good.
Nice.
I'm ready for warm weather. And
me
I
too.
Think next weekend is daylight savings, isn't it?
That I don't know.
That I'm pretty sure of.
We're leaving for Florida a week from Tuesday. So when people are listening to this, a week from tomorrow, and I can't wait. And then come back, and only like a month later, we're heading over to Aviva for your wedding, guy.
That's right.
It's going to be a good time.
In 2 Sundays from now.
Oh, okay.
It's the 13th for those that come to us for their moving their clocks forward for spring.
Yeah, for people who only listen to the podcast for their daylight savings
updates
needs. Yeah. So this episode is a complete surprise to you. And it's something I've been kind of thinking about for a little bit. And I couldn't figure out if we should prepare for it or not. And I think it could be good either way, but obviously you haven't prepared for it. I, in a sense, have. I kind of, you know, I'm going to give some credit where credit's due. And I think it was our buddy Josh Gay at 007 AUS, OSS, was talking to Kelvin Dyson about this topic. And it kind of got me thinking.
Oh, my God. Before you say anything, sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
I still need to listen to that episode. I haven't gotten around to it. That's fine.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Josh DM'd me yesterday and said that Lorenzo's a real piece of shit. And I said, I know.
You know what? Know. If the shoe fits. If the
I know, and he knows.
Fit,
yeah.
I
yeah.
I don't know what to say.
Oh, my God.
Hey. You can be a piece of shit, but you can be
the
wrapped in leather.
Fits. If the Danner boot fits. If the $2,000, $150 Danner boot fits. So this
with
episode,
a resale value of over $1,000.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which, God, still grinds my gears. So in this episode, I want you, and I'm going to try to break it into a couple pieces. And it's not going to be a super long episode, but my question to you will be, who do you think would be a good Bond director and why? So in this episode, as we move along, you have to think of this director, but you also have to give me a little reasoning why, as in name a film or two where all the elements combine and this would be why. And then also, I want you to tell me for which actor. You know, so it'd be like Christopher Nolan because of Inception and Memento, and I think he'd be a good director with Henry Cavill, something like that. And like I said, this is somewhat stolen from 007 AUS, Josh Gay, but not entirely, because it was just kind of a quick segment in their little episode. But this is something I've been thinking about for a while, because, you know, with this whole franchise reboot, whether it's a reboot or not, but I mean, it is, and it's, essentially it is, because, you know, like, let's be real, they're probably going to recast everybody.
Right.
You know, a lot of people have been calling for Cary Fukunaga to come back. I don't know if he will, maybe. I'm sure if he was offered to, he will. But hypothetically, if he doesn't, and, you know, even with this question, I don't want it to be based off of who you would prefer to be your next Bond. I want you to think of somebody you think could direct the shit out of a Bond movie. Tell me why. But then even if you think it's better if he does it with somebody other than the Bond you'd like to see. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So it's an interesting topic, you know, because we've seen unbelievable directors, Sam Mendes, direct not so unbelievable movies like Spectre. And then we also continue to see, ever since, I would say, Christoph Waltz, I would not put Javier Bardem in the lacking villain category, but, you know, are we seeing these incredible Oscar-winning actors fall short as Bond villains because of the script? Or is it their performance? Or is it the direction? You know, so this is an interesting thing. And I think a lot of the success of this franchise may hinge on who they choose as the director. What do you think?
Well, this can go a lot of directions. But
pun intended?
Immediately... What?
Pun intended. A lot of directions. Director. Pun intended. Too early for you to get that one, right?
No. Pun intended. So, yeah, very too early for that. I haven't been up for 30 minutes yet.
You took your hood off, too. That's sacrilege.
I
did.
I need the light. I need the light to kind of, like, wake me up. So when you were through this and kind of, like, I was getting the lay of the land of what direction you were going with your question, I was thinking about the director, but I immediately went away from the director and I went right into who writes the scripts. Because even with the comments about Spectre, Sam Mendes can do rewrites all he wants, but at the end of the day, he has what he has to work with. You know what I mean? Like, it's his job to make sure the film looks good and it makes sense, which, I mean, that last part could be, you know,
yeah, I mean, we can talk about the patina on Spectre for days here.
Yeah, and that filter
constant overlay.
I don't mind Spectre.
I don't either. I really don't either.
I look at it for what it is. It's a Bond film. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
It just gets exhausting when people just beat certain films down because of X, Y, and Z. And it's just like, maybe you're just not looking at it from a different perspective. Maybe you're just hearing it so much that you're just, this is what it is. And I've always said, like, Spectre is undercooked in the third act. And that's okay. I accept that. Mm-hmm. There's so much other good points in that film. Same thing with Quantum of Solace. There's so many great points in Quantum of Solace that don't get called out enough. I mean, everyone always talks about the style. Of course, it's great.
Right.
But I think a lot of people dismiss the fact that both of those films have been plagued by two pretty shitty things. Like, first of all, the writer's strike for Quantum of Solace. We all know about that. You know, and when you got Daniel Craig writing, you know, the last back half end of the movie, and it was only a one draft version of a film script, and they're trying to push it through. I mean, would you have rather waited 6 years for that second follow-up to Casino Royale? I know I wouldn't have. I'd rather have Quantum and it be like, you know, what it is than get nothing. So there's that aspect of it, you know, take it however you want. But then if you do that, do you really get Skyfall, or is the movie good enough that they continue on, you know, with the Quantum direction of the organization? And then you always have the fact of, oh, well, they won the rights over to Spectre, so let's go ahead and just do that. So there's all these factors that are the a lot of people tend to forget the history behind why these films went the direction they went.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, Quantum was supposed to be the 21st century version of Spectre, and they got the rights back, and they're like, "Well, we can't just not use this." Which I think I heard. I can't remember who was talking about it. Someone was talking about it, and they said that. I think it might have been David. But they said that every time Eon gets a new toy or gets something, mm-hmm. they want to just put it into play. And it was like, no, you had a great storyline with Quantum. Just roll with it. Just save Spectre in your back pocket for when you're ready to use it or with a new actor.
Right.
And I just felt like that's what started this whole thing of muddying up the timeline.
Right.
So, again, it goes back to, like I said, the script writing. So that's where my head went. So in order for us to have a better, I don't want to say better, for the direction and the tone of Bond to change, I think, you know, we need to have different writers involved with the process. I know No Time to Die had a different vibe to it. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she became a part of the writing team. And I mean, she was just in there to make, I mean, who knows how much she changed, but from what I've read and understand, it wasn't like she was heavy hand writing in the script. She definitely helped write the role for Paloma, but that was pretty much where it ended.
Right.
You know, and then a couple of the, you know, the conversations. Witty
one-liners or whatever.
Yeah. So, quote, punch up the script. So, I think if she wrote a whole script, it would look very different. I think if we had, instead of Cary Fukunaga and Neil Purvis's and Robert Wade's version of No Time to Die, and it would have been, you know, what I can't think of his name right now. Glasses director, he was supposed to direct No Time to Die.
Oh, Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle. Yeah. So if him and his boy script would have came out, it would have been completely different. The story would have been completely different.
Yeah. So I agree with that. I agree that you know, I mean, it's interesting to me how Neil Purvis and Robert Wade are the same people who wrote Die Another Day. You know, it's like they write good ones and they write bad ones. You know, and I guess it's just what's considered acceptable by Barbara and Michael at the time. But, you know, and I personally would like to see an entire Phoebe Waller-Bridge Bond script. I think she'd do a great job because Killing Eve is unbelievable, you know, and she can write. She can write basically whatever she wants. It doesn't have to be all, you know, Paloma-y the entire time. She can write something very, very thrilling and dark, you know, at the same time. So I would like to see something like that. You know, as far as the, you know, I agree too with what you said about people beating down some of these movies. I mean, you said it perfectly. Spectre is a Bond movie. Through and through, and not every Bond movie is considered, you know, flawless from start to finish. And yes, the suits are tight, but regardless of the fit of the suits, it is arguably between Quantum and Spectre, you know, those will forever be number one and two interchangeable for people of the best sartorial Bond films potentially of all time, you know. So people, you know, you gotta look at it from, but it's like, you know, there's people not doing what you and I do and living this shit every day that go to the theater and see Spectre and, you know, like David said, you leave the theater like ready to take on the world, head held high, like, fuck yeah, that was awesome. You know, so as long as it accomplished that and people had fun watching it, that's really the main goal. No Time to Die didn't do that, you know? So, it's, you know, it's different. You know, people can call that movie, when it comes to Sam Mendes and Wade and Purvis, a success. And then some, you know, somebody like you and I might not as much, but, you know, I mean, for the future, what would you say? Who would you like to see? You know, and like, let's put it this way. I know you're really big into the Mission Impossible series, and I know that you're a bit of a cinephile as well. So you watch all kinds of different shit like I do.
Have you ever watched a film? We'll start with this, just a little more broad. Have you ever watched a film and just thought, even if you didn't know who the director was, you're just like, wow, this could be, this got elements of a Bond film. You know, I wonder if this guy, whoever this is behind the camera, could direct a Bond film.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Mission Impossible, which, yeah, I absolutely adore that franchise because of the transformation it's gone through, you know, over the years and from movie to movie. And I have to gush over Tom Cruise for a minute because the guy is meticulously tenacious about the product he puts out.
Right.
And he loves to make movies. I mean, like, say what you want about him. When I talk to Tom Cruise, it's mostly, God, when I'm on here, I want to see Tom Ford so much. It's so funny. when I hear people talk about Tom Cruise, they're like, oh, you know, yeah, he's a good actor, but I don't like his personal choices. And I'm like,
right.
Okay,
right.
Great. Like, I could give a shit if he hailed Satan. Like, that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in talking about the movies he makes, you know, and not his personal choices. And at the end of the day, I think he's such a perfectionist when it comes to making these films that you can see it with the Mission franchise and the directions it's gone. I mean, you can almost like cut the six movies and make them two trilogies. And if you were to look at Ghost Protocol as the first, you know, the first movie of the reboot second franchise,
half, yeah.
The second half, and he's just, the only thing that didn't change is they didn't have a new actor in there. He was the guy, which, if you remember correctly, Jeremy Renner was supposed to be like kind of like being groomed to take it over, and then Tom Cruise realized, oh wait, I can still do this shit and I can do it good.
Right.
I just needed to get the right ingredients, you know. And it's interesting because I like that aspect of it because it just shows the commitment to quality and the commitment to finding the right equation. And then, you know, once he got, I always fucking forget this guy's first name, McQuarrie. I think his name's Christopher McQuarrie. Yeah.
The director?
Yeah. So once he brought him on for the second one of the back half, so film five, Rogue Nation, everything changed.
Yeah.
I mean, stunts got bigger. The storyline got better. The supporting cast got better. Their roles. They had found a really sweet equation to move forward with. And that's kind of what I want for the Bond franchise. But I was like, told myself when you asked me this question, I wasn't going to go to Mission Impossible because it's just way too easy. You know, as much as I would like Christopher McQuarrie to like come over and, you know, just do a couple Bond films, I don't know. I want to be a little more creative than that. So
yeah, well, take your time. Take your time.
Yeah.
Let me piggyback off this then. So let me ask you a question while you think of that. So with Mission Impossible, so this is, you know, it's a franchise that's been around since the 90s. It's, you know, it's been around for a long time. It's got Tom Cruise attached to it, you know, so it's got a lot of star power, a lot of popularity, a lot of box office success. Do you think that, so when Christoph Waltz was cast for Spectre, I thought to my, even Javier Bardem, I was like, holy shit, you got Sam Mendes and Javier Bardem, Ralph Fiennes, Daniel Craig, like, holy shit, just incredible. You know, and I think it's one of those things where people are like, wow, Daniel Craig is incredible. Look at the director they got. Plus, it's a Bond film. Like, I could never say no. You got actors begging to be in Bond films, right? But then, say once Spectre comes and they cast Christoph Waltz and he's a little flat, like, whether you like the film or not, they undercooked Christoph Waltz. He could have done more. You know, you think Inglourious Basterds versus Spectre, you're like, I can't believe this is the same guy, right? So then when they go to Rami Malek and they're like, hey, do you want to be in a Bond film? Do you think he says yes simply because it's a Bond film? Because say it was a different type of film in a franchise And the last film that they had done, they had such a talent like Christoph Waltz, and it wasn't anything special. Do you think that he's really only saying yes because it's a Bond film? And then in comparison to that, part two of the question, like I'm freaking Dan Rather over here, with a Mission Impossible film, do you think it also has the success? Because now they're rounding out their cast pretty damn well in Mission Impossible films. Henry Cavill, Rebecca Ferguson, Jeremy Renner, all these big names. So
Leia Seydoux.
Leia Seydoux, of course. But these are things that are going on and on.
Motherfucking window.
You know, I love her. But, you know, as they go on in Mission Impossible, their cast is getting better. Their directors are getting better. They're just picking up all this steam. And then it's like, even if a Bond film falls flat, people are still saying yes. So do you think that's just strictly because it's a Bond film? Or is it Rami Malek literally reads the script and thinks, wow, this is incredible. I have to do this. This is going to be the best move for my career because this is just life-changing. Because I think for a Mission Impossible film, people may look at the last one and be like, if it wasn't any good, I might not do it. However, their films seem to be getting better and better and better. Or a Bond film, you go to Casino Royale and then Quantum. I mean, I like Quantum, but critically speaking, it didn't do anywhere near as well as Casino Royale did. But you still have got people coming on again and again and again. Was that like a long-ass question? Now it's just like, who fucking cares? Or do you get what I'm saying?
No, I got the gist of it. I'm pretty good at following you when you do that. So,
no, long-winded guy.
It's a The thing is, yes, there's star power. There's the whole the whole facade of like, oh, I'm doing a Bond film. I'm going to be the baddie. Like, right. I get it. No one says no to that. Let's be clear. Like,
right.
Unless you have like this vision for your career and you're just like, oh, Bond doesn't fit into it. No one really turns those roles down. It's more like people are like clawing and, you know, trying to reach those kind of roles.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and again, it goes back to the simple fact that they keep using the same ingredients in the beginning that, you know, to write these movies, you know, the same people writing the stories, same people are looking it over. If you're not changing that aspect of the process, how are you going to get a bigger reaction? Like how are you going to get a bigger change if the same eyes are always looking at it, you know?
So you're more so looking at this as a writer problem than a director problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. I think if you're not willing to let other people express their aspect, their ideas of a character, that's when you start getting really bland, you know, and like, I hate using the word Bond equation when it comes to making these films, because I don't need to see the fucking DB5 in every film. I don't.
Right.
I really don't. And it's lost its charm for me. Like I know everyone loves and adores the DB5, but I will tell you right now, like, and I do too. Like, I love the car, but fuck, man. Like, that moment in Skyfall when I saw it, I was pumped. You know, like, it had been two films. You know, he won it. We knew how he got it finally. That was awesome. And it was so short and sweet.
The unveiling was incredible. Couldn't have been done better.
Exactly.
No, even from everything from score to M's reaction to the dialogue, everything was perfect about that scene.
Absolutely. And then you see it in Skyfall. It's a great reveal. And it's just so short. And then it's just like, here we go again, you know? It's like in every film. And it's like, let's kind of get away from relying on the past so much.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I love about Bond, and well, let's just say modern Bond, is you're bringing something to the table that's different and new and fresh and relevant for this era of time. Like, if you want to bring a DB5 in once in someone's tenor, you know, or just show it in a side shot, great. That's, you know, look back at Pierce's run, and I'm going to go off on a little tangent here before I get to the part I want to get to.
Go ahead.
But I mean, we see the big car race in GoldenEye in the beginning on the hillside, you know, with Xenia and the Ferrari. Awesome scene. Yep. I actually, I don't appreciate that scene as much as I do now. Like I didn't in the past. And now that I've like gone back and kind of reviewed it, I was like, God, that's such a good scene.
Yeah.
And then Tamar Never Dies. You just see a static image of just kind of chilling there. We know. And then he like pulls up to the consulate.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then after that, we don't see it ever again. That it's like we get it for two films and then it's gone. And the focus is like the Z8 and then, you know, the Aston, the modern Aston for Die Another Day, the invisible car. But they got away from it, which it if you think about it, if you think about the timeline. So the next time we saw the DB5 was in 06 in Casino Royale.
Yep.
That's almost 10 years until we saw the car.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies was in 97. So that made it like it was just enough time where I was like, oh. And then the factor of it being like, you know, this is how I got it. So getting back to the roots of this question, it was, you know, you're talking about the direction and the writing. Unless you're going to add new people in to affect the equation, and I'm not talking about dialogue, I'm talking about like ideas and pushing the limit, and it's kind of like every time we get a new Batman film series, like we're like a couple days away from having the Batman with, you know, Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
And I can tell you just from seeing the trailers, this is gonna be something completely different than we've ever seen before, a different interpretation. And I think Bond really, really, really needs that reinterpretation of, you don't want to get away from the roots of the character as far as a character, but you do want to like, you do want to challenge the tropes that are involved and the story writing and the way he goes about certain situations. You want to keep evolving the character into different iterations. So, I mean, I'm really hoping, you know, they will go a different direction with this new actor. And I would prefer someone younger. I would really prefer that.
Me too. Do you think, so, you know, you mentioned Batman and they always say pretty much every time, especially with this new film, they go right back to the start and they go to the comics. And then each one of these writers and directors and even the actors studying for these roles are pulling a lot of influence from the comics. Do you think it would benefit if the writers, directors, and actors for the next Bond film really pulled from the novels? Like the original novels. It's like, I don't want to be cast for Dr. No and then go read Dr. No. Like be cast for the next Bond film and then read all of Fleming's books. You know what I mean? And really get a sense for the character, how he wrote it, and then portray it that way. Do you think that would help?
I mean, Daniel did that. He read the books and they pulled from the books. And I think that's... I almost feel the opposite. I feel like that's the problem. I feel like they are relying so heavily on that material that Ian Fleming wrote that they're losing sight of creativity. And there's no perfect answer for this. Like there's no equation that's going to be perfect. I think it really comes down to preference at the end of the day. And I prefer if I was to draw up my perfect Bond film for it to be fresh, new, in the sense of like the style aspect, the concept. I want it to feel new. I don't want all these nods. And I felt like No Time to Die. Just endless nods left and right. I'm like, you know, like you get the first five and you're like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. And then it's like, okay, I get it. You guys are, you know, trying to do that. And it might've been a little heavy handed on the back end because it's Daniel Craig's last film and it's just his way of honoring all the past actors, which history is important. But we hear this complaint about like why younger kids aren't interested in the franchise. Well, when you keep showing the same, you know, 60-year-old car over and over and over again, like, of course, like, you know, like I get it. But what got me into Bond was it was the new factor. You know, it was, think about it, let's just go back to what it was that brought me and you in GoldenEye, the game. So a video game, which has nothing to do with the movie other than it's the character and somewhat of the storyline. we were entertained by that. We did some more research, and well, I saw Tomorrow Never Dies first, so it was the gadgets. It was the BMW, and everyone can shit on the BMW I want. That was a pretty badass gadget car, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies. And seeing that as a young kid, I was like, whoa, this is like a new car with new gadgets. And like, he's just like flying around and he's like killing people. He's got a watch that does fucking cool shit. Like, that's what grabs kids. I mean, think about it. You can make all the fucking toys you want. Yeah, you can grab, you can make all the toys you want. At the end of the day, if there isn't any new freshness to it, the younger audience isn't going to gravitate towards it. They just aren't. Unless they're an old soul.
Yeah, well, we were talking about this with Ray from Bond Armory last episode, and nowadays, it's like the spy stuff that they incorporate into movies isn't really anything as far-fetched as it used to be, which I also think kind of deters kids. You know, like when I was a kid and you were a kid, there was different spy things you could buy at the store, and it was like, you know, like, proximity, like, you know, like you would put it between the two door hinges, and then if somebody walked by, it would like beep, you know, just different little things, spy glasses, whatever. They don't use stuff like that anymore. You know what I mean? It's just like a little button or a little EMP on the back of his watch, you know, and how a kid can't be like, you know, you can't like market that to a kid. You know what I mean? But back when we were kids with Brosnan films, there was like little gadgets here and there where you could maybe make a toy out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then again, I just, the biggest difference between Pierce's Bond and Daniel's Bond is Pierce was very suave when he did things. Very, like, oh, that took very little effort, right? And he didn't. I guess he kind of comes across as like very little festers him, you know. And Daniel, on the flip side of that, it's like everything is like, oh, this is pain in my ass. Like, let me fucking go do this. You know, that's the mood. Like, and he had that cool factor, but it just doesn't come across as easy. It comes across as, I'm a badass. Like, I'm going to do what I need to do, you know? Right. And that's fine. I love it because they're two completely different interpretations. And I think that will always be needed, you know? We need a difference in style. I'm really hoping, like I said, the pendulum is going to like swing back and we're going to get a little bit more of like a suave kind of character being portrayed and not so much a, oh, I'm angry and emotional. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it was like, it started going so dark and got away from the escapism of the film that it started becoming so serious. It's almost like we've gotten to that point where we're like, okay, we're right on the cusp here of like this getting away from what it is that Bond movies have always been about, and that is escapism. And I want to be entertained at the end of the day. And like you said about No Time to Die, you didn't walk out feeling like you take on the world. You walked out like you had lost a best friend.
Yeah.
And you felt like someone had just ripped your heart out. And I get it. You know, I appreciate No Time to Die for what it is. The ending, I'm okay with it. It's not my favorite ending, but I accept it. I can watch it. It doesn't affect me in any way. I understand why they went the route they did, but there's going to be another film. So, like, I'm not really worried about it. You know, it's something that you have to just take it as it comes. And I think so many people put so much stock in when each film comes out, and as far as like being perfect, and if it doesn't make $1 billion, it's a failure. Or if you don't like one aspect of the film, it's a failure. It's like, no, like there's so much good there. There's so much I actually love about No Time to Die. And
yeah,
when we talk about our favorites and stuff like that, you know, rank your films. I always pick Casino Royale because from start to finish, every aspect of the film like just blends for me. You know, I have my gripes with it, like the style aspect of it. A little dated, fine. It's okay. But overall, the tone of the film and the way I feel throughout the film, that's what I like about it.
Yeah, agreed. So I back to kind of like the
the question I had about people signing on to these films. So we all know about the Anthony Hopkins thing with Tomorrow Never Dies. Do you think that after Casino Royale came out, you know, and I would even say Quantum, because then next thing you know, you've got Javier Bardem, Christoph Waltz, Rami Malek. Do you think if Casino Royale had come out and then, you know, with Daniel Craig, and then one of those films was kind of a Tomorrow Never Dies-esque film, and then they went to Anthony Hopkins at that point, do you think he would have signed on for it? With a complete, now you're talking different tone, different actor, more modern, more gritty. Do you think he would have done it?
I think unless he has full control over the character he is portraying, or, you know, has say in it, I don't think he's doing it. And I don't know. It's almost like that. It's almost when you have a star game, and for any sport, basketball, hockey, football, like baseball, like whatever. Yeah. When you get all these great actors on one stage at the same time, there's almost like an admiration between them that they almost forget like what their strength is, it feels like.
Yeah.
And because you have someone in a leading role and you're surrounded by all these other people in leading roles, it's hard to kind of try to dumb down your ability to steal the screen so that a certain person gets that attention. And you got to remember, the other thing is like, when you're the main character, you get all the screen time to develop your character, to show different aspects of your character. When you are supporting, you know, character, it's a lot less screen time. You have way more impacts that way. Think about
Dark Knight.
In a short time. If you think about Dark Knight, Heath Ledger is in, I mean, half the film.
Now, there was when that film came out, there was something, some sort of statistic of his actual screen time, and it's shockingly low, but he steals every fucking scene, which I know is what you're going to say, guaranteed.
Exactly, because he had no fear, and it's that weird thing where if you think about any time the Joker's involved with Batman, it's almost like the Joker is elevated above Batman.
Right.
He is like the main focus of those films. No other villains put on that level.
Yeah.
And everyone is just so, you know, they gravitate so much to the villain and seeing what they're going to do that it plays into that aspect of like, oh, well, it's the Joker. So like Batman's great, but like it's the one time where you can like literally let said supporting actor, which to me, I feel like Christian Bale's a supporting actor in that film.
Right.
I mean, because of the level of like tenacity, and you tell Heath wasn't holding back in that role. Like he was just bringing it. And that's the thing is like, there shouldn't be like, you know, it's a film, but if you're like going to bring these high profile people in, let them run with it. If they want to like go to that level, okay, like let them get there. Don't bring down an actor's ability so that it fits to make your hero look like a hero. Let everyone act, you know. Right. And that's what I was trying to get at with All-Star Game is like, you know, if LeBron goes to the All-Star Game and everyone expects him to perform, you know, who ends up winning the MVP? Some rando, you know, guy that barely got in there because he has no one putting any pressure or attention on him. And it's ultimately like, oh, I'm just out here having a good time. I'm going to chop it up. I'm going to do my thing. And next thing you know, he's dropping 30 points and he won the MVP.
Right.
So it's like, I think it's almost like you're creating like this, like you're trying to create this environment for the lead actor to perform, but like you don't want to challenge it too much. People are like, oh, well, you know, this isn't the case, but for example, it's almost like you're like, oh, we want Daniel to like be overshined in this movie because it's about him, you know, he's our Bond,
right?
And it's like, no, like let everyone go balls to the wall and let it lay where it's going to lay.
Yeah.
So he's got that twice. I mean, it happened with Christoph Waltz and now and Rami Malek. Like,
yeah,
just two incredible actors. Just feeling like, oh, okay, well, this is the box I got to fit in.
Yeah. And not to mention, when they cast both of those actors, we're talking like on the ride of a lifetime riding off Oscar wins. You know, like there was a point in time when Christoph Waltz, I think, was like 2 for 2. I think overall, I think he's 2 for 3 or 2 for, I can't remember. Like Mahershala Ali is like 2 for 3. And I think Christoph Waltz is 2 for 3. But at that point in time, same with Rami, it was like won an Oscar, cast in a Bond film. Won an Oscar, cast in a Bond film. And then when you followed up, it wasn't any good. So to kind of wind this episode down, as we were doing this, I came up with my director and my films and my Bond. Would you like me to go first?
Yeah, you go first. I got mine kind of lined up in my head.
Okay. So mine is also somewhat of a cheat, but I can explain it. So mine is Paul Greengrass. So Greengrass did the Bourne films, of course. Green Zone is my, so we'll say Bourne films is example number one for the obvious, Green Zone. And then we'll do Captain Phillips. So for the Bourne films, it's the obvious. You know, the Bourne films are a huge reason why Casino Royale exists in the first place, you know, with that whole vibe, right? And then, of course, with Casino or with the Bourne films and then even Green Zone, we've got the spy aspect. You see how great of a director is, of course. He is British also, so that obviously helps. And then with Green Zone, you see a very like realistic, very authentic, calculated character, you know, a very like, this is something that's happening daily with these special ops agents or spies or whatever. So there's a realism there. And then with Captain Phillips, it's just the thrill aspect of it. I mean, the end of Captain Phillips, when he's on that boat and those SEALs fire those shots. I mean, and then of course, Tom Hanks's performance after that. I remember seeing that in the theater, like almost wanting to puke. It was that good. I was like, holy shit. Like, it's one of those things where you think you're watching something like that is like taboo. You shouldn't be watching it. It's like real. Holy shit. You know, so that would be my example, Greengrass in those three films. And then the actor I would like to see him do it with would be Richard Madden. I think that he's younger and I think he can pull, I think he can kind of turn him into a Bourne/Bond-esque James Bond. You know what I mean? Kind of like a more realistic, still gritty, but, you know, I mean, and of course the Bourne films, there's really no comic relief in there. There's a lot of like the whole Pamela Landy, like, you look tired, hangs up the phone shit. You know what I mean? But that's where you get the writer to write something a little witty. You know what I mean? It doesn't need to be, oh, I've cast this actor because he can do one-liners. But I think Greengrass would do a good job of molding Richard Madden, especially post-Bodyguard Netflix BBC series or whatever that was. I think that would be a good fit. So that is mine.
Okay, well, you stole my Bond guy.
That's okay. We can do the same Bond guy. I mean,
no, it's all good. It's all good. It's funny though because as you were talking, I was like, oh, I want to make sure, like, and I Googled Richard Madden really quickly again, just to kind of get his look again. He was in the Internals, right?
Yes.
So I wasn't a fan of that film, but I got to see him more, a little more in that film, which kind of gave me more of like a sense of like his look and stuff and his movement. And I was like, okay, I'm a little bit more on the Richard Madden train right now, which is cool.
Me too.
As far as directors, I really want to say Christopher McQuarrie, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I think I would really, really, really want to see a Christopher Nolan Bond film. I think okay. that's the direction I would like to go. I think with his creativity and his commitment to original filming styles, I would love to see that. And I'd like to see him do three films. Like, just commit to it. Let him do a trilogy. Let it be his. Let him run with it. He will start from the ground up. I mean, there's a scene in Inception that I'll never forget. It's when Leo DiCaprio's kind of breaking back into the chateau, and like he like comes through the window, he almost falls, you know, because he had the projection of, you know, Maul, and he comes in and he just starts kind of working his way downstairs to get to the safe. And just like that, the shot of him kind of walking through the kitchen and then he starts killing the guards and just the handling of the weapon and stuff like that. I was like, God, I didn't see Bond doing this. Like just that sneaking around kind of aspect and that those dark tones, but it's just like smooth like a panther almost.
And that's with DiCaprio, you know, and one of the best.
Yeah, he's wearing like the Navy suit. Yeah. Yeah.
But he's not your Matt Damon, Daniel Craig, you know, like badass, you know what I mean? He's more, that's just showing how well he can direct somebody.
With that. Yeah. And the cinematography is always there. Like it's always incredible. So I'm looking from it from a style aspect and from just like we're going to go like kind of technical. I mean, he's sitting there, he's like catching the bolts out of the car, you know, out of the chamber, like the car, the spent shells. So I'm like, God, this is some like cool shit. And I just get those like pictures of Bond. So I would love to see him direct.
Mm-hmm. And what have are a heavy what are your examples? So you did it. You said Inception, of course. What else? What other?
So then there's that. And then there's the in Tenet when they're like kind of they're doing like the reverse bungee jump on the side of the building. Very cool. Like very original thinking, like something I'd never seen before. And I was like, whoo. This is some badass stuff. And then even the car chase in that film was awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, the whole backward stuff. And you know how he likes to play with time. That's like his MO. It's like time.
Yeah.
So can you imagine him like applying a factor to a Bond film where we're doing something we've never seen done in a Bond film where time is being toyed with? It would be very, very like mind blowing.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is I don't want him touching any of the sound of the film.
because
he tends to like overdo the aspect of, you know, just it's just way too much with the sound. That's one thing that is a deterrent for me. My runner-up choice was Guy Ritchie because I just love Man from U.N.C.L.E. with Henry Cavill. So
nice choice.
If they were gonna go the route of like a 60s Bond, like themed Bond. Or like influence, that's who I'd want to direct that film.
Yes,
he did such a great job with that, and it's just very artistic and modern and artsy, and like so that would be a follow-up. But anyway, back to my Nolan Bond film. I would keep Hans Zimmer in the driver's seat for the score, just because I just think he crushes it. If we were to go outside of that, Warren Balfe from Fallout, really like that guy. That soundtrack, or sorry, that score was just incredible. So there is like potential out there. If Hans is like, no, I did my Bond film, I'm done. That'd be who I'm picking up the phone and calling next. And then you got to think like Nolan has this habit of bringing in actors that he likes to work with. So you got to imagine. Michael Caine's going to be in there in some form fashion. I think he'd be a great M. And if he's not M, like possibly a Q, who knows? As far as women go, I would have to put a little more thought into that because I like the aspect of someone that can steal the screen like Paloma did, but I definitely want to have new faces and new direction. That's the biggest thing. You know, so I want Christopher Nolan to be Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, agreed. Memento. Another good one.
Yes.
That's just his storytelling is very, very good. You know, that's a prime example. Well, I think this is a good little discussion. What do you think, Guy?
I think it's great.
I mean, this is something that you can just kind of roll with eternally, you know. because until we see the next group of people.
I mean, at the end of the day, we'll get a new Bond film, we'll get a new actor, we'll get a new director, and it'll be who it is.
Right.
You know, it just, you go down to the base level of it, that's the part that kind of sets the tone for everything, and I want to see change. You know, like, I want them to really, like, go out there, like don't worry about failing, just be unique, you know? And, you know, if it doesn't work, then you get another film to fix it. Like, it's not like Bond's going to fall off the face of the earth if you have one bad film or you do something outside the box.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, it would be interesting. I do think that, you know, the stakes are pretty high for this next actor and this next film. You know, I think overall, maybe the main point of this discussion, you brought up really good points with all the writers. You know, that's something I kind of never even really thought about too much. But I just think hopefully the formula needs to be just right, you know, between the director, the actor, and the writers, you know, especially with this, you know, you've done the most drastic thing you've ever done with a Bond character ever, you know, and then you've taken, whether you love Daniel Craig or you don't, you know, you've taken arguably the best Bond in the history, you know, aside from maybe Sean, but, you know, and that's another debate for another day, but more so today, people are, they, I mean, you know, Barbara, everybody flips shit over Daniel Craig. So you've taken everybody's, one of everybody's favorite Bond actors. He's gone. You did what you did to the character. He's technically gone. And, you know, now you've got to really up the ante and, hopefully they get the formula right, guy.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm sure we'll have another lead up discussion into this, but I did like your perspective. Like, that's the part that makes it interesting is, like, I'm going to go watch some of these films you mentioned that I haven't seen, you know, let's just get on with it. Let's get to the next, you know, the next film. I know you're pumped. I'm pumped. But, I mean, the 60th is coming up, so we're going to have some things around that, but it's quiet right now. And that's fine. Like, we have time to reflect and kind of enjoy. And it's funny, like, how, like, I was talking to Cassandra about this, the whole, like, oh, a film comes out and then it goes dormant. It's not even dormant for me anymore because I do so much creating with, you know, with my channel and with you and with other people that it's like Bond never fully went away this time, you know, which is kind of new for me. And I like it. It's almost like, okay, like, let's look at different aspects of it. Let's touch on this, let's touch on that. But now it's like we talked about, we want to do like creative spins on certain things and be creative. So I think we're doing, I think we're heading in the right direction. And as soon as we hear something, we're going to jump on here and get excited and the process will start all over again. And our women will hate us.
Right. And maybe we can go back to this episode and, you know, who knows, maybe one of our predictions was right.
Yes, maybe.
We will see.
Maybe not. We will see.
We will see. Well, I think that's it for me, guy. Anything else you want to add?
Thanks for being you. You're the best. Thanks. Don't ever change.
You too, guy.
Thanks. Famous quote of my director of Barney's, my late director of Barney's. Shout out, Tony Pagliuzzo.
Tony Pagliuzzo.
He was a cool mentor, like, for sure. Yeah, learned a lot from that guy about style and fit and stuff. So
cool. Well, thank you guys, thank you Paisano for humoring me with this completely surprise topic. I think we actually did pretty damn good with it, you know. We had it's not anything crazy, but you know, something we can talk about for hours as usual. But as usual, great work, guy. And unless you have anything else to add, we will see you guys next week. This one goes out to the one I love. Fire! Fire!
one goes out to